Community Voices with Ron Holland.
In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting.
Community Voices with Ron Holland.
Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. On Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
And a good morning to you. Welcome to Community Voices. I'm your host, Ron Holland. We have another provocative and thought-provoking show for you this morning. Of course, the Ebola virus is garnering so much attention. The outbreak that is gripping West Africa continues, of course, to raise alarm all over the world. The virus has claimed hundreds of lives in several countries in West Africa, and according to the World Health Organization, there are well over 1,000 cases of Ebola in the West African region. And some estimates are now, folks are suggesting that there could be upward of 10,000 cases per month if we don't get a handle on this thing. This virus, which began, of course, its spread in Guinea, has spread to Liberia, and we've seen a greater number of cases in Sierra Leone. But of course, Liberia is really now the focal point that the country and the world is dealing with. And it is interesting. Now, it has reached our shores. There is a heightened concern that an outbreak is almost inevitable here in the United States. Already, you have members of Congress calling on President Obama to issue a travel ban from West Africa, which, of course, most experts believe that is counterproductive. If you were to issue a travel ban, the first thing, the very first thing that would happen is people desperate to get here to the United States would travel to other parts of the globe. And then, of course, they would try to find connective flights to the United States. When that happens, we would have no control or the resources available to ensure that other governments are going to implement a robust travel ban to prevent people with Ebola from traveling. So that is a dilemma, of course. And secondly, in order to effectively combat the spread of this deadly virus, we have to be in the position to monitor people who are affected. How are we going to do that if people are who are infected are dispersed in areas unknown to us? That is going to be an impossible task, given the size of the African continent and the plethora of places that people who are affected can travel. So I don't think that would be productive. What is clear to me is that we have to dial it back, dial back our fears and dial back our emotions. Yes, we ought to be concerned. Yes, we ought to take various precautions to protect our individual selves and our family. Yes, we ought to move our Congress to ensure that measures are in place to stop the spread of this disease, which includes perhaps forcing every hospital in this country to spend the money to better protect our nurses, to protect our doctors, our environmental service workers, anybody that is on the front lines. We have to make sure that our hospitals are effectively using the resources available to us in order to combat this deadly disease. But to panic, to stoke fear, is both irresponsible and counterproductive. And I'm telling you, that is what we're seeing, particularly from those with an agenda against the president. We're seeing that right now. And of course, Ebola has reached our shores when Dr. Kent Brantley of Fort Worth, Texas, and Nancy Wrightball of Charlotte, North Carolina were transported back to the United States to get treatment after they were stricken with Ebola. Both were treated, were treating Ebola patients in West Africa. Both have survived, but the same can't be said for Minnesota resident Patrick Sawyer, who collapsed and died from Ebola when he was in Lagos. But when Thomas Duncan returned to America and symptoms of Ebola began to manifest, he sought treatment in a Dallas hospital and was initially given antibiotics and sent home. Incompetence. And although Duncan's family alerted the hospital that he was recently in West Africa and may have contracted this disease, hospital staff had this sick man in an area of the hospital with other patients. And the ripple effect is that now two nurses are being treated for Ebola, and upward of 70 other people are now being monitored daily to determine if they are indeed infected. Duncan, as you know, folks have passed away, and you know, ultimately it was his negligence and selfishness that put many people at risk. And according to reports, he lied on the return application that asked if he was in contact with people who had Ebola when he was in Africa. And when the symptoms began to manifest, he exposed his family. He exposed healthcare workers. He exposed a lot of folks in the community. And I don't want to besmirch or speak ill of a dead man because, you know, he's gone. But he did bear some responsibility here. We ought not forget. And I know that he has family here in North Carolina, but the reality is there was some error on his part. So let's not forget that. And please, let's not try to gloss over that point. Now, to me, and I want to be clear about this, and I think a lot of people are articulating this, incompetence and malfeasance has also been on full display at the Dallas Hospital and at the CDC. And, you know, interestingly, I saw an interview this week with Daniel Varga. He is the chief, the Dallas Hospital chief, and, you know, he's doing a mea culpa. But the reality is there is incompetence on the part of that hospital. I want to be absolutely clear about that. Not by nurses, not by doctors, but by hospital officials and those that are in charge at the CDC. Heads should roll at the CDC. Heads should roll in the administrative staff, including the hospital president or chief, for their complete and utter failure in this. The hospital, my friends, failed to protect its nurses by not putting the proper protocols in place or purchasing the necessary protective gear to completely protect their workers. Gross incompetence, in my judgment. The CDC failed. They didn't adequately protect travelers when they allowed a nurse who was not only exposed to Ebola, but was showing symptoms. Her name is Amber Joy Vinson. And I understand that she contacted her superiors, who then contacted the CDC, and yet she was allowed to travel. Incompetence. And now, you have a yet-to-be-identified healthcare worker who took specimens, Ebola specimens, from a patient. That individual is on a 19-day cruise on a Carnival cruise line. Do you hear me? First, we have a nurse who did her part by alerting her superiors that she might have been showing symptoms of Ebola. They turn around and call the CDC. The CDC still allows this woman to travel on a plane. And now there is a scramble to find all of the individuals that were on that plane with this woman. And now you have another healthcare worker who is on a cruise ship with possibly hundreds of passengers. And now the cruise ship, that entire ship, is being prevented from docking. Royal incompetence. This is incredible to me. This is incompetence. This is malfeasance. This is feckless leadership. And ultimately on the part of, not only just on the part of the hospital, but on the part of the CDC. This is crazy to me. And I want you to consider something here, because you're not going to hear this from a lot of other folks. But this ineffective leadership is being played out on a part of the hospital. And we understand, at least at this point, that there might have been a profit motive, and that a profit motive is the underlining factor in why these workers in a Dallas hospital were not prepared. Why? Because of lackluster training, second-rate protective gear, protocols well beneath the standards, and you wonder why our nation is gripped in fear. I want you to take a listen to an interview, a fascinating interview conducted by NBC's Matt Lauer of Nurse Brianna Aguirre. She's on the front lines, and she is a nurse at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, which is, of course, now the epicenter of this Ebola crisis in the United States. Take a listen to this.
I believe that they should have known that they were not handling this well, this Ebola crisis. They should have known that it was getting out of hand, that they should have called in more help, even to make a public plea and say, help us, you know, help us get the supplies we need, help us get the nurses the education and training they need, anyone. We're not handling it well. And I watched them violate basic principles of nursing care, of medical care. We never talked about Ebola, and we probably should have. We never had a discussion. They gave us an optional seminar to go to, just informational, not hands-on. And it wasn't even suggested that we go. It wasn't, something that they said, you know, you really should try to make it. It was, I believe, only offered once, if not twice. We never were told what to look for. I just don't think that any facility in this country is prepared for that at this time.
Absolutely incredible. A round of firings should be forthcoming here. And I want to be clear about this. President Obama is doing what is required to reassure a fearful nation. He's ordered the CDC to step it up. He sent hundreds of troops to Africa to help build treatment centers, which are sorely lacking and desperately needed. He's garnered support from Congress to allocate millions to this effort. But I think what is needed now is to force absolutely every hospital in this country to spend the money that is required to better train the nurses, to better train the doctors, to train the environmental service workers, because they're the ones that are going to have to clean these rooms. They're the ones that are going to have to get rid of the linen. These environmental service workers are the one that's going to have to mop up the blood and mop up the feces and anything that's connected to this. So these hospitals ought to be tasked. No, they ought to be forced to spend the money that is required. The hell with profit. This is the distinction between government and private industry. And I hear Republicans always harping on this idea about government incompetence. Well, private industry is lacking in leadership, in my judgment. An executive order must be in place or must be placed to force private industry, these private facilities, to do what should have been done years ago in preparation for something like this. And again, for all the harping and complaining the Republicans do about government failure, they are awfully and woefully silent when private industry demonstrates a complete lack of judgment, a complete lack of leadership, and in this case, as in others, malfeasance and gross incompetence. This, my friends, is the mark of hypocrisy on the part of the Republican Party. They are quick to blame the president, but are silent when this private entity, such as the healthcare industry, when they fail. That is incredible to me, folks. And it is also incredible that the Republicans conveniently forget to articulate how they took a hatchet and an axe to budget cuts. And now we're seeing the results when the CDC doesn't have the necessary resources available to do the kinds of research that is necessary to come up with the kinds of vaccinations and preventative measures to prevent the spread of something like this. Now, I don't want to stoke fear, but I do think that context is important here. In preparing for this show, I wanted to take a look at other diseases, of outbreaks that killed and ravished millions of people around the globe. Fortunately for us, we're in a better position to deal with these kinds of crises. And I was completely blown away just by the sheer numbers of people that have died as a result of major outbreaks of disease. And many of us have heard of these diseases, but we have not really dealt with and really considered how much they ravished and killed. Smallpox from 430 BC to 1979 killed 300 million people in Europe. The Spanish flu from 1918 to 1919 killed between 50 and 100 million people. And many of you heard of the Black Death between 1340 and 1771. 75 million people were killed from the Black Death worldwide, which, as some of you might know, began in South or Western Central Asia. Malaria, from 1600 to today, 1 to 3 million people are killed annually. And of course, you know, AIDS claimed the lives of 25 million people worldwide. And we remember back in the early 80s when that epidemic began to make its way from this country around the world and so on and so forth. It was incredible. And of course, you know, gay men were obviously the blame for this, but we know and we instinctively know that there could be other possibilities here. So it is just fascinating to me. Cholera, 1817 to today, hundreds of thousands of people worldwide died of cholera, which began its spread from the Ganges River in India. You've heard of the term typhus. From 439 BC to today, killed 3 million people between 1918 and 1927. The first case was in Italy, known as the Plague of Athens. There are a number of diseases out there that can move quickly, spread quickly, and kill and ravish. And it is unfortunate. But we are, my friends, in a better position. And unfortunately, when this kind of situation emerges, there will be and have been and in this instance are a host of conspiracy theories floating around out there right now. And you go on Facebook and other social networking platforms and you'll see it. I heard one suggest that Ebola was created to kill off black folks. I heard the Ebola pathogen was created in a lab as a bioweapon. We've heard this stuff. And the most crazy, the most outrageous, the most idiotic thing that I heard just this week is that President Obama is responsible for the Ebola outbreak because he wants America to be more like Africa. It's amazing to me. I mean, this is crazy to me. And of course, with fears, with anything like this, comes irrationality, silliness emerges, outright idiocy, and a loathing that the government has nefarious intent begins to emerge here. And it's unfortunate. Now, this is not to suggest that there isn't precedent for this, because most of us, particularly in the black community, we are well aware of the Tuskegee experiments, the syphilis experiments on black men. We are well aware of forced sterilization in our country. All of this substantiates this fear. I mean, right now you have a situation where folks in North Carolina right now are, you know, the government is slow to allocate the money that was made available to those victims of forced sterilization. A mix between government and private industry. So we have precedent for this, but I don't think that in this particular case there is nefarious intent, no concerted effort to kill off the black race, because we know that most diseases, most pathogens, and the like stem from environmental factors and how the human body responds or reacts to external organisms. I read where shifts in population, migration of certain animals like bats, and disruptions in various ecosystems and in places like the Amazon, how that can unleash certain organisms that are violent to the human body. And this, of course, is especially true when you're eating certain animals or when rodents spread illnesses and large populations can be exposed to various types of organisms and diseases. But I want to be clear here. There's a huge demarcation between populations wiped out by diseases and outbreaks of the past and what we're seeing with Ebola. Our healthcare systems are far superior to that of systems of the past. Although we have to contend with royal incompetence on the part of the CDC and gross malfeasance on the part of privately owned hospitals and privately run hospitals, certain diseases are more robust and can evolve, and we are more equipped to tackle these challenges, but we can't do it with fear. We ought to be concerned. We ought to take precautions. We're required as a country and as a world to be vigilant. It's necessary that our government, regardless of party, put aside politics and political opportunism and begin working together as a nation and ultimately as a globe. We must do all we can to help and assist our global neighbors. And I want to be emphatic about this, my friends. Please, please reject those voices on the right who are stoking fear and xenophobia. Please, folks, don't allow prejudice and bigotry to creep into this crisis. Don't allow religious idiocy and conspiracy and downright racism dissuade you from showing compassion and humanity. We can be concerned, but we ought not be mired in fear and panic, because ultimately that can be our ruin. We can't implement a travel ban because when people begin to disperse out of desperation, then we have ultimately more chaos than we are seeing right now. People are afraid. And we need our leadership to be more forceful in making sure that those folks who are tasked with the responsibility in ensuring that the people who are on the front lines, that they are well equipped and well trained and have the proper and necessary protocols in place to ensure the stop of this spread. Now, we've lost one individual, Mr. Duncan. We have two nurses who are infected. We have 70 people who are being monitored on a daily basis. The potential for this to continue to actually become a real outbreak, the potential is there, but we as a country are well equipped to combat this particular crisis. But we have to be vigilant here. But most importantly, and most critically, we cannot be mired in fear and loathing. We have to stand firm. And ultimately, and I want our Republican friends, I want our political apparatus to hear me and hear the American people clearly. We don't need bickering. We don't need Washington politics. We don't need 2014 political tearing. We need leadership that is going to deal with this crisis as a country, not efforts to get into office, not efforts to score political points, not efforts to besmirch our president and to continue to erode his polls. We need leadership that is going to be forthright in caring for absolutely every American citizen and also making sure that we do our part for our neighbors around the world. This is a crisis that can really mushroom into something that we absolutely don't want to see. But if we're mired in fear, ultimately we're going to pay the price for that. And I don't think that any of us want to see that. Let's take the proper protocols and precautions to make sure that we are protecting our family and protecting our friends. Make sure that individuals who are infected, that they are isolated and given the kinds of treatment that will help resolve their particular health ailment. But let's not tether ourselves to the kind of politics and fear that has so far just made people think less of the people that they are surrounded by every single day. I read a case where an individual, an African from Liberia, you have our African brothers and sisters who have nothing to do with this other than the fact that they are Liberian and that they are from Africa. They are being teased, they are being mocked, they are being ridiculed, they are being excoriated for being an African. We can't have that. And when you have individuals like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the like, all of these individuals on the right, who all that they want to do is criticize the president instead of rallying the people, the American people, to combat this issue as a nation. Now, if there's incompetence on the part of the Obama administration, yes, we need to call them out on it. If we need to force Congress and the president to do more and to have a more robust response to this, then we ought to do that as a country. But let's not get tied down to political politics so that the next Republican can get into office. As a nation, we don't need that nonsense right now. We need real leadership on both sides of the political aisle. And as I've said, I think the president is doing exactly what needs to be done. But I think what needs to be done more and more forcefully is to make sure that these hospitals, Republicans, if you are concerned about government, government overreach and a bloated government, and the malfeasance on the part of government, I need you to express the same sentiment when it comes to private industry and these private hospitals. Let's make sure that these hospitals are doing what is required to make sure that these folks who are on the front lines are protected. The proper gear, the proper protocols, the proper training, the proper sensitivity. We don't need fear, we don't need loathing, and we certainly, most certainly don't need people stoking fear and creating crisis in this country. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. We're going to continue monitoring all of the developments with regard to the Ebola crisis. And again, please make sure that we're all exercising the necessary precautions to prevent the spread of this deadly virus and that we are not gripped in fear. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. Also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. Today's show is available on our Praise Charlotte website, as well as our Old School 105.3 website. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.